This is a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station.
7:36 a.m. You're listening to The Morning Run. I'm Shazana Mokhtar with Keith Kam. Now, in half an hour, we have the Breakfast Grill, and it's one you're not going to want to miss today because in the hot seat is YB Ramkarpal Singh, the Deputy Minister in the Prime Minister's Department in charge of law and institutional reforms. He's also the three-term MP for Bukit Galugor, and we're going to be discussing what the government agenda is when it comes to the reforms that is touted by their leaders. One of the, I think, main pieces of legislation being pushed through at the moment is a moves to abolish the death penalty, the mandatory death penalty. So that's something that Ramkarpal will be wanting to discuss extensively today. We'll get into that after the 8:30 a.m. news bulletin. But in the meantime, let's turn our attention to what's happening over up north in the Asia Pacific.
Yeah, last week, South Korean President Yoon Suk-yeol traveled to Tokyo to meet his Japanese counterpart, Prime Minister Fumio Kishida. This was hailed as a landmark visit aimed at thawing the icy relationship between both countries. It was also the first official visit of a South Korean president to Tokyo in 12 years. The two leaders agreed to resume regular visits and also to resolve a long-running trade dispute. Tokyo is lifting restrictions on exports of semiconductor materials to South Korea. Seoul has withdrawn its complaint to the World Trade Organization.
So while the Japan-South Korea rapprochement was cheered on by the U.S., North Korea seemed less pleased, firing a short-range ballistic missile towards the sea off the coast of the Korean Peninsula. So how will these developments shape bilateral relations between Tokyo and Seoul moving forward? And what does it mean for the rest of the region? Joining us to discuss this is William Pezek, a Tokyo-based journalist and also columnist with Nikkei Asia. William, good morning. It's always good to have you. So how big of a milestone was this summit between the two leaders of Japan and South Korea in terms of improving the bilateral relations between both countries? Can you maybe talk us through on what happened in order for this to take place?
Well, I mean, you know, first of all, let's applaud the effort. As you said, this is the first time we've seen this in 12 years. This kind of meeting would have been unthinkable during the days of Prime Minister Shinzo Abe, more of a nationalist than Prime Minister Kishida. And so I applaud the effort. It's good to see Japan and South Korea compartmentalizing the past and looking for ways that they can cooperate today and tomorrow. And I think that you see a recognition between these two North Asian powers that they need to take some actions, frankly, in the age of China. I think that this really says more about Xi Jinping and the way that he is in some ways botched geopolitical diplomacy, if you will, that he's taken these two countries that essentially don't like each other and driven them together. And I think that's the interesting part here. I think in many ways, you see this National People's Congress in Beijing recently, and you see the ways in which President Xi is angling China for his third term as president. And I think a lot of Asia is looking at this development, and they're not feeling terribly good about where China's heading in terms of geopolitics. And it's driven these two rivals, Japan and South Korea, together. You see, even in the Philippines, you see a fairly new president, Ferdinand Marcos Jr., angling towards the U.S., pivoting towards the U.S. more than China. And these things are not a coincidence. And again, I applaud the effort that we're seeing from Japan and South Korea. Am I very optimistic that this will lead to something lasting? I'm not sure, because both Prime Minister Kishida and President Yoon are pretty unpopular leaders, right? I mean, Prime Minister Kishida's approval ratings are in the mid-20s at best. President Yoon, his approval ratings have often been below 30%, or even rather below 40%, I should say, in the 30s. And so I would feel better if this was on the watch of two leaders with a mandate and more popularity. But, you know, again, it is good to see.
William, with President Xi Jinping in Russia right now, do you think battle lines are being, well, I mean, lines in the sand are being drawn between countries that are, what I want to say is, like, you know, the enemy of my enemy is my friend.
Yes, I mean, I think the split screen here is fascinating. As you mentioned, you know, you have President Xi going over to Russia, meeting with Vladimir Putin, who is actively turning his country into North Korea as we speak. And you see President Xi going there. Why isn't President Xi traveling to, say, Singapore? Why isn't he traveling to Indonesia? Why isn't he traveling to Vietnam? Why isn't he traveling to South Korea? He's traveling to Russia. And I do think this is a fascinating split-screen moment where Asia's looking at his priorities and where he's going first after the National People's Congress. And it's not East Asia. It's not Southeast Asia. It's not Malaysia. It's Russia. And I think that message is a very powerful one, and not one that really works to China's advantage.
Coming back to Japan and South Korea, we did see a number of deals that were signed off the back of this meeting. I mean, what were the most significant developments, I guess, from your perspective? Although I know you're not too optimistic that the rapprochement can last, but what do you think, what do you hope to see hold?
Well, you know, certainly in the post-COVID era, the ways in which Japan and South Korea are making tourism easier, that's a good step in the right direction. I think the trade loosening is a step in the right direction too. And I think when you look at the banking turmoil we're seeing right now between Silicon Valley Bank and the U.S. and Credit Suisse, I think any effort Japan and South Korea can do to deepen trade ties, but also deepen financial ties. You know, Japan and South Korea have had these currency swap arrangements for many years now, and there's talk about deepening those. And that's a very good step at the right moment, because when you look at the interconnectedness of the global financial system, anytime you start to worry about banks failing anywhere, you want to maintain stability. So anything South Korea and Japan can be doing at the moment to basically increase their interconnectedness, financially speaking, with these currency swap arrangements is a step in the right direction. So, you know, that's not nothing. I do think that's an important signal that basically you have that Asia's number three and number four, rather number two and number three economies at the moment joining hands financially in a very, very close way. And that's a step in the right direction.
And North Korea responded to this meeting by firing a long-range missile that landed in the sea between the Korean Peninsula and Japan. What can we read from this, given the volatility of Kim Jong-un?
Indeed. I mean, you know, North Korea can't be happy. I mean, there is, you know, Kim Jong-un's policy has been divide and conquer, basically, when it comes to diplomatic neighbors. And for North Korea, this is not good to see. And I think also, you know, North Korea is feeling rather ignored at a time when so many people are focusing on Ukraine and Russia, when there's so much focus on Taiwan and China. I think North Korea has been feeling very, very ignored. And I think also North Korea's biggest business has become basically, hacking cryptocurrency exchanges around the world. And that's becoming harder now that crypto prices are more volatile and falling and governments are clamping down and transparency is increasing. So at the moment when they need, basically, they need financial and food help, North Korea is reminding us that we're here.
William, I'm curious about public sentiment regarding the thawing of relations. I mean, there are strong emotions between the people of Japan and South Korea, given the wartime trauma. So what is the public sentiment towards the reconciliation at the moment?
Well, you know, here there has not been a great deal of focus on it here in Japan, not a great deal of press coverage on it. And the reason is because South Korea is doing all the work, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, President Yoon is traveling to Japan, not exactly hat in hand, but something to that effect. I mean, President Yoon is coming to Japan. He's doing all the heavy lifting. He's setting up the meeting. He's traveling. He's also putting Korea in a situation where it will be paying basically World War II reparations that the Korean Supreme Court has demanded that Japanese companies should be paying. So if you're Prime Minister Kishida, you know, you take the call, you take the meeting. For Kishida, this is kind of risk-free. And I think the Japanese are looking at this as a South Korean initiative. Japan just kind of going with it, and we'll see what happens. I think the bigger risk is for President Yoon in South Korea. As I said a moment ago, he's not wildly popular there, and he was elected as an anti-feminist president, whatever that means. And so basically, he already has half of the Korean population skeptical of him, the female half. And basically, he doesn't have a very strong mandate. And here he is cozying up to Japan without help, you know, without any support from the parliament, without any buy-in from opposition parties. And now he has to return home to Korea and sell this policy. And I don't think it will be very easy to do. And it'll be interesting to see how his approval ratings are affected in the months ahead. In Japan, there's not a lot of attention on this. But in Korea, there's a lot of anxiety about it.
William, I'm curious about this Chip for Alliance initiative that's been touted in recent weeks. What does this mean for US, South Korea, Japan, and Taiwan? Is this a thing eventually?
I think it is. And I think you know, this is probably, you know, Donald Trump waged trade wars, which, you know, did very little to slow China down. I think that what you're seeing, this kind of chip access between, you know, the US and South Korea and Japan and Taiwan, this is something that really gets China's attention. And I think it could bear fruit over time. The most important thing will be to see this through. And I think, you know, I think President Biden is determined to see this through. I think Prime Minister Kishida is as well. President Yoon is certainly, the Taiwanese government certainly. So I think this is something to keep a very keen eye on, because this is something that Xi Jinping really cares about. When you look at the recent comments out of Beijing, it's almost as if Xi Jinping cares more about winning the chip war or getting China back into the global chip war than GDP levels. And so that's an interesting pivot in terms of priorities in China. So certainly China's taking this very seriously.
William, thanks as always for speaking with us. That was William Pezet, columnist with Nikkei Asia, giving us his takeaways from the landmark visit between the leaders of South Korea and Japan last week, and what that really means for geopolitics in the Asia Pacific. It's seen as a kind of a warning sign or a kind of, haha to China in a way.
I kind of feel like, lines are being drawn in the sand that, you know, if you're my friend, you're not my friend kind of issue.
It's very much like being in kindergarten all over again. Anyway, 7:47 a.m., we're going to head into some messages. And when we come back, we'll discuss issues related to touch and go. Stay tuned, BFM 89.9.
You have been listening to a podcast from BFM 89.9, the business station. For more stories of the same kind, download the BFM app.